Hello, and welcome to WBUR's Common Health Podcast. I'm Carrie Goldberg.
And I'm Rachel Zimmerman.
On this week's podcast, we take a look at an author's claim that overuse of psychiatric medications may be making many people sicker than they would have been and preventing their recovery.
And the House of Representatives voted Wednesday to repeal the health care law. We have some reaction from health reformers here in Massachusetts.
And Rachel will explore the relatively new phenomenon called pine mouth, a disorder that some people have developed after eating pine nuts from China.
So, Carrie, you posted a special report this week that raised the question about whether psychiatric drugs are actually doing more harm than good over the long term. Give us the scene.
Well, the scene was actually a very colorful one. There was a very memorable debate that took place in this fabulous historical old dome hall in Massachusetts General Hospital. It's called the Ether Dome because it's where ether was first demonstrated as an anesthetic back in 1846. And it still looks just like a sort of a cinematic version of a medical amphitheater where the lecturer at the bottom is showing the students what they should do. Only in this case, it was a debate between a prominent member of the Mass General Psychiatry Department and an author, a local author named Bob Whitaker. Whitaker has this sort of very explosive hypothesis that it could be that taking psychiatric medicine long term is actually detrimental to many patients. And the psychiatry department, which is sort of the pinnacle of psychopharmacology, it's the top ranked psychiatry department in the country, was responding.
Probably not happily responding. Tell us about their reaction a little bit.
Their reaction was indeed quite negative. They sort of accused Whitaker of leaving out data that didn't fit into his hypothesis and of not believing that biology lies at the basis of mental illness and made various accusations like that. While Whitaker was mainly presenting the studies that led him to his belief that it could very well be that, in fact, for many patients, not for all, staying on psychiatric medications could be worse. He believes that there are significant reasons to believe that in schizophrenics, it could make their symptoms last longer and be worse. In depressives, it could be that sometimes in some people, taking an antidepressant will flip you into bipolar disorder, which is much more serious. And with people with bipolar, it may be making their symptoms worse.
So, Carrie, you were there. What do you think? Should we all stop taking our antidepressants now?
Well, you know, this is my gut check. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not any kind of expert. I'm just a reasonably intelligent person who sat through this debate and also read the book, which is called The Anatomy of an Epidemic by Bob Whitaker. And I came away with the feeling that I would be just a few degrees even more wary or leery of psychiatric medications. I mean, there are many, many people who take them and have good results or at least not negative results. But I think at this point, if a friend or a family member or I myself were considering going onto a psychiatric medication, I would try a couple of more non-medication things before I went that route.
What's the most compelling evidence he's got?
Well, one really interesting piece of evidence was a study that was done by the World Health Organization that found that it's better actually to have schizophrenia in an underdeveloped country where they don't give you many medications than in the United States. And in fact, he said that he became convinced that living in a developed country is actually a risk factor for never getting over schizophrenia.
Well, that sounds like a little bit of a longer discussion.
Yes, it's a much longer discussion, and it's a very difficult question because there are certainly lots of arguments on both sides. But Whitaker himself ended up, he was on Radio Boston this week, and he ended up summing it up kind of nicely himself.
Maybe what you really need is a paradigm of care that says for some people, medications can be helpful long term, and for some people, they can be harmful, and you have to figure out who can benefit and who does not.
Right. So that's how he summed it all up. Okay. Now, Rachel, how about the big national news? The House of Representatives' highly predictable vote to repeal federal health care reform.
Right. It was highly predictable. Mm-hmm. And they carried through on their campaign promise to vote to repeal health reform. As many have written, it was largely a symbolic vote. The president has said he's going to veto it. It probably won't even come up in the Senate. But still, they did vote to repeal, and a lot of local folks reacted and talked about how detrimental a repeal of national health reform might be. In fact, U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius had a conference call yesterday with Governor Deval Patrick. And she said, while the vote was symbolic, it isn't symbolic to the millions of Americans already connecting with pieces of the health law. Several of the provisions have already kicked in, and people are already benefiting. Glenn Shore, who's the chief of the Massachusetts Connector Authority, said, although national repeal would not undo many of the provisions of our state reform law, it would have many downsides. Tax credits for small businesses would be repealed. Senior citizens, some of them who are now getting assistance with prescription drug costs, that assistance would go away. Co-payments per preventative care would be canceled. And protections for young adults who remain on their parents' health plans until the age of 26 would likewise be terminated. So there would be a lot of negative impacts if that actually was repealed.
And I think we here in Massachusetts have a particular perspective on it because although there are certainly flaws, it's working fairly well here. 98% of the population now has coverage.
Right. Actually, almost 99. So the coverage issue here is largely taken care of. And as we've written a lot about, they're now dealing with the cost issue.
Right.
But again, that's a longer conversation. And actually, the governor said that if the national law was repealed, tax credits for up to 80,000 small businesses, which now help small businesses buy health insurance for their employees, that would be eliminated as well.
Yikes.
So it would have a real effect here.
Yeah. Thank you, Rachel. And now for a story that's sure to leave a bad taste in your mouth. Tell us about it, Rachel.
Well, this is this bizarre phenomenon known as pine mouth or pine nut mouth, which I'd never heard of.
Me neither.
A friend of mine emailed me and she said, I am having this horrifying experience. I was snacking on pine nuts the other day and now everything I eat tastes disgusting. And she looked it up in the internet, as we do when we have health issues. And apparently there have been a bunch of reports about pine nuts that are imported from China that cause weird symptoms, ranging from just simply a metallic taste to what my friend is experiencing, where everything tastes gross. I mean, she just said it's a powerful sensation of disgust that she can't get rid of. Ew. It lasted for 3 days, and she can't eat anything. She said it would be a great diet tool if it wasn't so disgusting.
That's just what I was thinking of, actually, right. Especially if it only lasts 3 days.
Yeah, I think this is one of these don't try this at home experiments. She said the only thing that tastes good is water with lemon juice.
So it's a juice fast, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Sweet and salty things are the worst. Citrus is awful, she said. Blueberries are slightly palatable. Anyway, she said it's a really interesting experience aside from the yuckiest. I called the FDA, and they said there have been about 100 complaints of pine nut mouth since 2009 till now, some reports of GI illness, and then this taste problem. Okay. And the FDA spokesperson said, in September, the FDA directed our field offices that received complaints to collect samples, and they've sent them to an FDA lab for research, and they're hoping to get some information and results later this year, and I will be checking back with the FDA to see what those results might be.
Yes, I'd be very interested. As far as we know, there's no particular danger, right, if you start having this odd sensation.
No, it seems like it's a fleeting 3 to 4 day phenomenon.
Uh-huh, good. And last but not least, with snow once again in the forecast, we'd like to end with some positive motivation to exercise. We run posts almost every day about why to exercise because we feel like it's one of the best things that we can do for our readers. And here's one of our recent favorites. One reason to exercise today is so that you don't die shoveling. There was a very interesting report in the Wall Street Journal about all of the dangers of shoveling. And in fact, they are fairly extensive. The Wall Street Journal wrote that hospitals on average treat about 11,500 injuries and medical emergencies a year that are related to shoveling snow. In particular, shoveling places extraordinary demands on the cardiovascular system, and it can raise heart rates above the recommended upper limits after only 2 minutes. Also, freezing temperatures constrict the peripheral blood vessels, which also stresses the heart. And 2/3 of shoveling injuries occurred in men, and 15% of injuries were in children under 18 years old. And more than half of the injuries resulted from acute musculoskeletal exertion, 20% from slips and falls, and nearly 7% from cardiac problems such as heart attack. And as we all know, there's almost nothing better you can do for your heart and your cardiovascular system in general than exercise. So that is today's inspiration.
Great. Thanks. I'll make sure my husband does the shoveling this weekend.
Yeah, just make sure he warms up beforehand.
Okay.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. We'll be back next week.